rather significantly this afternoon. One vice president presided, who is from California, during the election of officers from one very western part of our convention, and I'm going to ask Ms. W.P. Watson, the vice president of Maryland, to occupy the chair during the president's address. Madam Chairman, some months ago, the magazine Christianity Today carried an article entitled, "The Next 10 Years." It posed this question: what factor, more than any other, is likely to decide Christianity's influence in the next 10 years upon society and secular thought? Editor Carl F. H. Henry gave his reply: the recognition or non-recognition of divine revelation and divine authority will be the determining issue. Whenever a culture loses a vision of the eternal and drifts from a living sense of morality and otherwise flouts biblical realities, it is headed for heathenism. In essence, this is the very question treated by Ross Coggins in his new book, To Change the World. For truly Christianity that is devoid of divine revelation and divine authority is not Christianity at all, but a sterile religion with no transforming power to change the individual, much less change the world. Whenever a culture loses the vision of the eternal, is this not just another way of restating the ancient wisdom of Proverbs, where there is no vision, the people perish? Each generation must discover for itself the divine authority of Christ or be disobedient to the heavenly vision. Each generation must see the urgency of missions or lose the vitality of its religion and its desire to change the world. Now, what of the years ahead? Consideration cannot be limited just to the next 10 years. Both the Home Mission Board and the Foreign Mission Boards are shouting in an attempt to rouse us from our Southern Baptist easy chairs to be prepared for the year 2000. The date may sound unbelievable to you, but let me remind you that it is only 35 years ahead. And barring catastrophic events, many of you sitting here in this audience this afternoon will have occasion to write the date. My, these are tremendous times that began, and they began today. I sometimes wonder if we are escapist at heart. Are we really trying to comprehend what our mission boards are telling us? The birthquake that is all about us, a galloping ratio of births and a dwindling ratio of born-again Christians, an overcrowded world doubling itself in less than three dozen years, certain areas right now with standing room only. Half of the world's population today, under 20, born not with silver spoons in their mouths, but with begging bowls in their hands. This nation of 190 million who must move over to make room for 140 million more. Wall-to-wall people, concrete canyons, cities that collide with each other. Indeed, I agree with a seminary teacher who declares, the world we know is going, almost gone. And it does no good for us to say, stop the world, I want to get off. How then shall we respond? With resistance or with creative change? With resignation or with vision? A forward-looking church in West Jackson, Tennessee has outlined goals in preparation for the year 2000, when that church will celebrate its centennial. Plans for new buildings include double-deck parking space with a landing deck on top of the roof for air cars and helicopters. Far more significant to me and far more exciting are the spiritual guidelines and the mission goals which came out of that church's serious study of changing needs. Change or consequences. The expression is a play on words that describes a popular game, a parlor game of our youth, when you and I used to play truth or consequences. But believe me, there is nothing play-like in the necessity of facing change or accepting the consequences. Morbid preoccupation with our traditional patterns may mean an attachment to the status quo, and stubborn resistance to change may mean a rejection of opportunity. You know, I'm amazed at the vision of Fannie E.S. Heck, an early president of Woman's Missionary Union. I want you to listen to this advice that was written half a century ago by that wonderful woman, and yet so timely for our world today. Listen, she says, "The pages of history are strewn with the wrecks of organizations which died of inflexibility. It would be possible for the union to so tread in old paths that it might outlive its usefulness and be justly numbered with the things of the past. Here is a demand for the highest statesmanship, a knowledge of changing conditions, the foresight to lead rather than be driven, to seize and mold rather than have a Christ to show, a church to strengthen, and a commission to obey. I believe that missionary education must not only increase, but permeate churches throughout our Southern Baptist Convention. And yet, I'm somewhat alarmed when I realize that 1/4 of the churches of our convention have no WMU, and more than half have no brotherhood. Now, only informed Baptists are inspired Baptists. So what about the missionary education in these churches? Do you have some of these churches in your association? Do you care about the missionary education in these churches? Has your WMU become just a stagnant pool of privilege rather than a real, honest-to-goodness channel of blessing? I sometimes think what tight little circles we draw about ourselves, meeting regularly in well-organized societies, providing for ourselves the very best in missionary education. Oh, my friends, let me plead with you this afternoon to reach out to those small churches nearest you with offers of mission study classes and special week of prayer programs or subscriptions to mission magazines, or offer them visual aids, and then fan that spark of interest into organization, not for the sake of counting more organizations at all, but to ensure vision for a new age. Change our consequences. This applies to many challenges that confront us today, not only as an organization, but as individuals. Anthropologist Margaret Mead has said, we are now at a point when we must educate people in what nobody knew yesterday and prepare in education for what nobody knows yet, but for what some people must know tomorrow. On the drawing boards of vast uniworld university is predicted by 2000, with microfilmed libraries instead of books, and a television substituting for a classroom. In that case, one would have only to punch a button, a translation button, and hear world-renowned lecturers in any language. Now, whether or not this be true, past concepts of learning are as far removed as Kitty Hawk from Cape Kennedy. But are we on the verge of outsmarting ourselves? No matter how effective secular education may be, it can never prepare us fully for contemporary living. The Shemaian complexities of this age demand trained Christian minds which follow the mind of Jesus Christ. And here is the challenge to our churches. For the proposed life and work curriculum is a start toward meeting this challenge. Advances in curriculum planning will make some of our past programs in Woman's Missionary Union comparable to McGuffey's Reader. We must keep pace. However, I believe we will not grasp the significance of a comprehensive, correlated curriculum for Southern Baptist churches until we grasp the meaning of those words used to describe it. Listen, Bible-based, church-oriented, action-inducing. A dedicated WMU staff in Birmingham realizes that except the Lord build, they labor in vain. And the new curriculum will be a sounding brass and tinkling cymbal. Most earnestly, therefore, I ask your prayers for both staff and writers. Oh, for a vision of world need that will never leave us night or day. A Macedonian call that would be as insistent as that which accompanied Paul's vision. And in addition, I believe that we need a renewal of gratitude to accompany that vision. Blessings are for service, not for self. My preacher father used to say to me, and he said it so often he sounded like the phonograph stuck in the record groove. Living like an Alice in an American wonderland, you and I are so prone to believe that all people live as we do. Prior to the Panama Baptist Convention this spring, the WMU Executive Secretary, Ms. Helen Stewart, took me to see home mission work at several widely separated mission stations. In the interior of Panama, where missionaries Jane and Wendell Parker serve, we attended Sunday night services in a crowded, tiny little church, apologetically taking up space while two Panamanian men stood throughout the entire service. This little church is less than 3 years old, with 45 members and four missions. That night, the people were completing their Annie Armstrong offering, and the missionary preached the sermon using the material from Royal Service, our prayer programs, as he preached in Spanish. There was an invitation to accept Christ, and there were conversions that night. And then they closed their service by bringing their Annie Armstrong offering envelopes. I was stirred, remembering Paul's description in 2 Corinthians of the grace of God bestowed upon the churches of Macedonia, how that in a great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy and their deep poverty abounded unto the riches of their liberality. Actually, I think I was unable to fully appreciate the extent of their liberality until the following morning when I saw their mud huts, thatched roofs, and dirt floors. We drove miles over the worst roads imaginable to take clothing to Christians who wanted to be baptized. I wondered if the missionary's car would break down before the payments were completed on it. And I had my own private nightmare of that car breaking down that particular day, as it had on many previous occasions, and I visualized my trudging hours in the hot sun back to the main road. We visited among these winsome people who worked so hard just to feed their families and keep them clean. Women walked along the roads carrying the clothes they washed in the river or the fish they caught, and others plodded toward the village with heavy baskets of bananas to sell, their faces reflecting just sweet, patient endurance. And I wondered what would happen if you and I had to exchange places with them, even for one day. Could we husk our daily rice in a wooden grinding urn? Could we clean fish and build a fire on a dirt floor under the kettle and cook the fish there on the ground? I doubt I could last even a day. And yet we are told that by the year 2000, if American economy holds, the average family income is estimated to rise past $15,000. However, the great American dream is not synonymous with the vision glorious. We face some threats today as well as challenges. Will our stewardship keep pace with our blessings? Or, as an American statesman fears, will the supermarket become our temple, the singing commercial our litany? You know, my very earliest memories of missionary society go back to a social, a box supper, when I was a small child, sitting on the floor playing with my blocks. Now, I do not recall much about it except that it was a money-raising scheme and my father disapproved. I only remember the fried chicken in the decorated box, beautifully decorated by my mother. And I remember the instructions she gave my father in no uncertain terms that he was to buy her box. After all, it was for a good cause. It was for missions. Now, how my father rejoiced in later pastorates when women turned from box suppers and rummage sales to prayer and stewardship studies. Oh, how he loved the cooperative program and the special mission offerings. And members of my family who are here this afternoon will remember how he used to ask in those last years when his grown children came home with their little children for Christmas vacation. His first question to us, representing seven different churches, as we came in, his first question to us was, "How much did your church give to the Lottie Boone Christmas offering this year?" Once again, it is time for us to take a giant step forward in stewardship. God is not particularly impressed with our giving out of comfort and abundance. While many live on the edge of decision, others live on the edge of despair without knowing the saving gospel of Christ. No longer can we label our churches missionary only. We must be missionary. Woman's Missionary Union has a church-assigned task of providing organization and leadership for special mission projects of the church, such as the weeks of prayer and mission offerings. And this places upon us the responsibility to reach beyond our membership in special assignments to involve more church members in missions. Oh, my heart does join the heart of those great mission secretaries who lead us in praying that wider church participation and increased mission offerings will, in the words of Dr. Baker James Coffin, open in our hearts new springs of compassion that will cause gifts to flow out through the cooperative program month by month. In an automated world of impersonal IBM machines, there are still tasks for the personal eye. This is an invitation to action, guided by those mission action leaflets that delineate special needs. We will introduce these action leaflets at our summer conferences at Ridgecrest and Glorieta this summer. And we will be thinking much in the days ahead about mission action through our WMUs. Dr. Jasper MacPhail, the missionary doctor in India, writes, "Action punctuates 1,000 sermons. Until we have identified ourselves with a man's human needs, it is doubtful if we have the right to enter the sanctuary of his soul. Are we fit vessels to carry the gospel? It took a vision three times repeated to rid Peter of his prejudice and make him a fit vessel. One cannot read Acts 11 with an open mind and fail to see implications in our day in God's unmistakable teaching regarding all men. As Peter argued there on the housetop of Joppa, remember that a voice from heaven declared for all time to come, what God hath cleansed, call not thou common. Like Peter, Christians have their pleasant prejudices. And I believe that Woman's Missionary Union can be used of God to further his vision of the gospel for all races and Christian attitudes in race relationship. At least it has been true in my own experience, for it was the late Mrs. William McMurray of the WMU staff who first made me probe my prejudices in 1953 in a WMU conference at Ridgecrest. And it has been WMU periodicals and publications through a dozen years since that time that have led us all, bit by bit, sometimes painfully, to distinguish between prejudice and principle. Just this time, last year, in Atlantic City, in the final hour of our annual meeting, Ms. McMurray gave what proved to be her last message to Woman's Missionary Union, SBC. Brushing aside shallow pretenses, she swept past racial barriers with her vision of God who hath made of one blood all nations. In the audience, one woman turned to another and said, "Mrs. McMurray has gone too far this time." Her remark was overheard by Mrs. McMurray's daughter, Billy Emmons, who later repeated it to me with sadness rather than bitterness. And then quietly, Billy paid the most fitting tribute a daughter could give Ms. McMurray. With steady voice, she said, "If mother's Christian convictions should mean her death today, she would not consider that she had gone too far." Are we excused from such conviction? For some time we have recognized America's treatment of minority groups as a stumbling block to missions. Southern Baptists, here we stand, halfway to greatness, with a long way to go. True, we do not have pat answers. We do not have answers for every problem. But as members of Woman's Missionary Union, we are held accountable unto God for Christ-like attitudes, responsible action, and persistent prayer for all men created in the image of God, some of them born black. An awareness of crushing world need, indeed, an awareness of the spiritual destitution in our own land, would utterly defeat and discourage us were it not for an added knowledge of the power of God. He is able not only to save souls, but to change lives and to alter the whole course of history. However, women are great worriers. We borrow trouble. We say, "Who shall roll away the stone?" And like women approaching the tomb, we do not take God's power into consideration. We speak as if only earthly forces are available. But Psalm 20 reminds us, some trust in chariots and some in horses, but we will remember the name of our God. True, Satan's troops are strong and his walls are high, But we shall not go to meet tomorrow with dragging feet. We will leap over barriers as indicated in Psalm 18. For by thee have I run through a troop, and by my God have I leaped over a wall. This is the drama of our time, greater than any technical or scientific marvel. The redeemed and the ransomed labor us together. Surely this is the vision glorious spoken of in Habakkuk 2. For the vision is yet for an appointed time, but at the end it shall speak and not lie. Though it tarry, wait for it, because it shall surely come. For the earth shall be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters that cover the sea.
Now would you listen to this emergency announcement? Chaplain Clarence G. Cole, please call Bunker Hill Air Force Base, and you will remain seated for just a moment and help us as our president and those on the platform leave. Everyone, absolutely quiet and still where you are. And the missionaries will please leave your seats now, and our overseas guests, program personnel, make your way out these aisles all the way to the back. And will those of you standing in the door in the back please clear the way? We'll ask the ushers to help us, everyone, out of the doorway in the back. We're trying to clear this auditorium in 2 or 3 minutes. And we'll ask all of you to help us, and thank you so much for doing it. I'll give you the signal when the missionaries have reached the back door. Let those who are leaving go as quickly as possible. Those of you in the back door, clear the way as fast as possible. Now you were so wonderful to do that, and you go that way.